The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 21st of April, 2026, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green. Today's Guardian headline, Davis claims FNM desperate for power. Today's Guardian business section headline, Bahamas grid company transitions to all Bahamian-led operating model. Listen, I do not doubt the competency of CFAL and Mr. Anthony Ferguson. I don't at all. This critique has nothing to do with the capacity of the new entities or individuals engaged at Bahamas Grid Company. What I have today is how and why. Are we reading a headline that says Bahamas Grid Company transitions to all Bahamian-led operating model? Now, I couldn't start the show without touching on those headlines. We have a guest in studio today. Yesterday, I let you know we are still talking election. We're still talking politics. We're looking at a specific sector, and we have a sector expert, leader, stakeholder joining us today to give the, I guess, the Davis administration and the Blueprint for Change a grading, an assessment based on commitments made to said sector. And we're going to talk about some of the work that the organization that's going to be with us in studio today has been doing and how it juxtaposes with, coincides with, is a part of the national electoral conversation. But this headline, Bahamas Grid Company transitions to all Bahamian-led operating model. There just seems to be a total and utter lack of clarity here. Was this the plan? Was the plan for Bahamas Grid Company to transition to an all Bahamian-led operating model? Was this one of the 25-year SPVs? In fact, I can read quickly from the article, the connection between BGC's announcement and the sudden absence of Pike's workers raises eyebrows, given that the formation of IGS was done with the understanding that the agreement with Pike would be a 25-year deal, as far as the government has said. We stick a pin right there. To the caller on the line, this is not the thrust of our conversation today. I can entertain one call before we transition to our guest. We just couldn't start the show without reading that headline. See, because I was the one who invited you all to 1622 Avenue and Frank Watson Boulevard, so that we could convene and make sense of what was happening around us. And so I could not let that headline go. I'm going to go to the phone line quickly again. I'm taking a morning caller.
How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yes. My question is, how far along is the solar component of this venture along?
Mm-hmm.
How much progress have they made so far?
Now, remember, hold on. I don't think there is a solar component to the transmission and distribution, the T&D element. Remember, that's why they broke them into elements. This island, this Bahama Grid Company, was supposed to be responsible for transmission and distribution systems. So okay, I accept what you're saying. We want a progress report.
Yeah. I understand that.
Yes,
but,
sir.
But when the project was first tabled, the main focus of it was an aspect of renewable energy.
No, absolutely. So if I could reframe it, you
yes.
also want a progress report or a status update as
yes.
to the contractual relationship between BPL, the Bahamas government, and the entities that were contracted as a part of the energy reform process.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anyway, but my main question
yes.
is that CFAL and Andy Ferguson are involved in many projects that are connected to the government. Why is he the chairman
mm-hmm.
of this entity?
Okay, so
I mean, you know, that for me, you know, that seems like a kind of conflict of interest here.
It could appear to be a conflict of interest. Like I said yesterday, it may even be, like I said yesterday,
yes.
in a small state, conflicts
yes.
of interest are unavoidable. So
yes.
we need mechanisms to ensure clarity mm-hmm. and transparency is possible at all times. When I started the show, I said, I don't doubt the capacity, right? The professional and technical capacity of CFAL or Mr. Ferguson or any of the Bahamian individuals appointed to the company at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something that I read this morning that suggested that because of Mr. Ferguson and CFAL's familiarity with the project, they may be best suited to step in and take the lead, right?
I understand that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems as CFAL is at the center of everything.
I feel you. Let me respond to that.
Yes.
You made the point. You know what I think we need to then do is we need to encourage young people and professionals
yes.
to reinvest their money in building the capacity of their operations, right? Maybe it is that CFAL is the best choice because they have spent this time investing in the capacity of their entities to perform at this level. We need to stop spending our money on disposable personal experiences, and we need to begin investing our money into national entities to support the development and growth of the country.
Yeah. You know, probably, you know, we need to have a discussion about what is better and what is best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think, you know, because we say to move away from the nuances that most discussions should have, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to think in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
All through, you know, and, you know, we need to put our gray matter
to work
into the context.
Yes, sir. And
anyway,
I think you've asked reasonable questions. I just don't have the time
yes, yeah, I know.
To really delve into them right now. But we're going to get to this.
You know, in this particular season, I couldn't let, you know, I am just as concerned as you are, you know,
mm-hmm.
in seeing that headline this morning.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Anyway, stay safe.
Yes, sir. Thank you. For the young people out there that don't understand what we're talking about before I make this transition to our guests, I am about to be 50. And I grew up in the Bahamas where you didn't know when the power was going to be off and it was going to be on. Now, maybe that was a particular part of New Providence that I lived in, because the little neighborhood I lived in, it turned out for many, many, many years, was not connected to any monitoring system. Went off in my neighborhood, I'd have to call BPL and tell them the power was off. And then I'd have to wait through the script of, are you the only customer affected? And then sometimes I'd have to tolerate hearing people say things like, well, until we get another call, there's nothing we could do. I don't know, maybe you could start investigating. Maybe I don't have the tools to determine whether it is an area-wide outage, but you have the tools. See, that's the Bahamas I grew up in. And then there was 2013, where every bucket, every barrel of wine that I had turned into vinegar because BC couldn't keep the power on. Couldn't keep the power on. And here we are once again, me inviting you all to a meeting at 1622 and Frank Watson Boulevard so we could figure out what exactly should we prepare for this summer. I'm just saying, once again, let me end this segment by saying this. I do not doubt the professional and technical capacity of CFAL, of Mr. Anthony Ferguson, of any of the Bahamians appointed to Bahama Grid Company. I do not doubt their professionalism or their skill set at all. I am concerned about the way that the government tells us that the nature of the agreement for the T&D, Transmission and Distribution Services, in the Bahamas with Pike has changed fundamentally. Just raises concerns for me. Now we're going to transition. We're going to transition to our next segment, which all is from Equality Bahamas. We're talking about the Davis administration's commitment to women and children, LGBTI people and human rights and vulnerable people in the country vis-a-vis the Blueprint for Change, whether this administration has lived up to its commitments. What are the demands or issues raised by Equality Bahamas during this Davis administration, whether they were addressed satisfactorily by the Davis administration? So we're going to discuss some of those issues. And then I got some questions for Ms. Wallace. And Ms. Wallace, when we talk in women's rights, we always talk about CEDAW, the Convention for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. But did you know that yesterday was 420 day? Ms. Wallace, you there?
Good morning. Hey. Yes, I did note that.
It was not a word, not a whisper yesterday from any state agency working on the cannabis reform. And I thought, like, that's a clear indicator to me that we don't necessarily see on cannabis reform. We just like going through a legislative exercise and we're not quite sure why, because anybody who is working with cannabis reform would know that 420 day is the day to garner the attention of people to your policy work. And so I just wanted to say, to start the segment by saying today, April 21st, is UN World Creativity and Innovation Day. It's UK National Tea Day, but it's also International Day of Women in Industry, a global observance celebrated on April 21st, 2026, focusing on women in industrial sectors. So happy International Day of Women in Industry. Ms. Wallace, still there?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Okay, there we go. Happy International Day of Women in Industry. And I know we're going to get into feminist standards for governance, the policy creation exercise that Equality Bahamas hosted over several months leading into the general election. But what were the top issues for Equality Bahamas during this Davis administration?
During this administration, we were quite focused on the demands that we repeat every year. It was also known as 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. And as you know, we have generally 5 to 7 demands that we make at that time. And as we see the progress that is made or isn't made, we make adjustments to those demands. So one of the top demands on that list was the updating and passing of the gender-based violence bill, mm-hmm. which the Davis administration seemed that it was going to action and took a number of steps before completely stepping back, dropping it, and actually staging a distraction for the women's rights advocates, the NGOs, and the general public.
Okay. Are you satisfied with the Davis administration over this term, and have they fulfilled their commitment, the commitments they made, whether overtly or explicitly or implicitly, or are you satisfied with the progress that they've made?
We definitely can't say that we're satisfied with progress made. We can look back at a number of statements that have been made by the Prime Minister, by other people in the administration that have been quite dismissive to women, to women's rights, to human rights, and to the people who are engaged in this work every day over time and that have been engaging or at least trying to engage with the government, whether that's with the Attorney General's office or through the Department of Gender and Family Affairs, which is within the Ministry of Social Services. We have found that these entities have been very slow in moving anything forward, and it almost seems as though the slowness is by design so that there can be distractions and so that attention can be put in other places. But within this term, we have had a number of key moments, including the Universal Periodic Review, mm-hmm. which took place just a few years ago in Geneva. And that was an important moment for us because Equality Bahamas put forward a submission to that body. And we went to Geneva and engaged with states around issues that we're facing in the Bahamas and that are being faced in other states and what we have seen other countries be successful in addressing so that we could influence the recommendations that came out of that process. We also paid attention to the responses that the government of the Bahamas received the recommendations. And to put it politely, actually, they have been disingenuous in their responses and the ways that they have presented what has taken place here in the Bahamas in response to the international obligations to upholding and to expanding human rights. So one example of that is the issue of femicide, where we really pushed for a recommendation, and we got it, that the government of the Bahamas put in place systems and processes to ensure that we are recognizing the sex and gender-based killings of women and girls as femicide, so that we are able to appropriately name them, we're able to count them, and we're able to analyze these cases toward prevention, to be able to create programs and services that ensure that we reduce and then eventually eliminate the sex and gender-based killing of women and girls. When this recommendation was received, the response from the state, the Bahamas, mm-hmm. was that there is no femicide in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
hold on, wait. To the news.
Technically, they may be correct because they don't even have femicide in the Bahamian dictionary, right? Like, I think they believe if they don't use the word, then it doesn't exist here. By their logic, maybe they're correct, but that's not logic.
Right, and that's not what is meant. And they know that's not what's meant by the recommendation. And they know the reason that it's important to name these crimes, these incidents in this way, so that we are able to acknowledge that this is based on gender. This is a result of harmful gender ideology that we hold, these quote-unquote traditional ideas that we have about women and girls and men and boys and the ways that we're supposed to behave individually and collectively and the ways that we're supposed to engage with one another. Mm-hmm. And the stories that we're reading in the news far more often than we probably have in the past tell us that there's an idea of ownership that men have over women and girls. There's this idea that to be in relationship, romantic or sexual relationship, is to possess. Mm-hmm. And for women, it is to be possessed, to be owned, and to be controlled. So when women step outside of the boxes that have been created by the person that they're in relationship with or used to be in relationship with, because sometimes the relationship has ended, mm-hmm. there is
If we could stick a pin, the recent shooting on or off Adley Street, right, where whoever wrote the story, right, like one of the articles about the incident actually says something like that she attempted to break up with him. She broke up with him, right? Like, apparently they alleged that the person who shot her was in an intimate relationship with her at some point. The person who writes the article says she tried to break up with him, right? But in fact, what happened is she broke up with him and he refused to acknowledge that she ended the relationship. So thank you for allowing me to stick
a
pin.
Yes, and that one person can decide that the relationship is over. You need two people.
Yeah, no.
To make a relationship happen.
Yeah, no, one person can end a relationship.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry. I wanted to use, I'm sorry, I don't have the article in front of me to call off the head, so people could read the story themselves. But this was one of the most recent shootings. Well, not the most recent, but several weeks ago.
Right. It's quite ample of what we're talking about and the dynamics, the ideology and the ways that we have been taught to live our lives and to engage with one another. And so this is the reason that we have to analyze these murders to mm-hmm. see what they are rooted in. Why is it happening? And what do we need to do as society? What does the government need to do to prevent this happening and to eliminate this in the future? And you mentioned the elimination of all forms of discrimination against women, which we call CEDAW, or the Bill of Women's Rights. And in 2018, that was the last time that the Bahamas had to make a report to the committee and the last time that we received recommendations. And among the recommendations made by the CEDAW committee was the note that the government has a responsibility to change gender stereotypes,
mm-hmm.
to address the issue of negative gender stereotypes, specifically about women and girls. And this is a really important point because it shows us that there are responsibilities that the government has on making laws. It's also mm-hmm. about policy. It's about programs and services. And we can see the relationship between law and policy and at the micro level, behavior and what is happening in households and in relationships.
I also want to piggyback on that and ask you if I could add on the language that's used when discussing law and policy, right? And I want to read from two articles. The first is Davis, Crime Against Women is No Joke, 6th of March, 2020. That's 6 years ago. PLP leader Philip Brave Davis yesterday suggested that women walk in groups and carry mace to protect themselves from violent crimes. Davis also defended his statement that the government should provide women with whistles. Quote, we suggest to our citizens avoid dimly lit areas, close quotes, he said. Quote, we suggest that tall streetlights should be functional. Women are encouraged to travel in groups. The perimeter of vacant lots should be cleared so that it is not used as a hideout for would-be assailants. Quote, we need all components of Marco's law fully implemented, including the public alert system and a sex offender registry. Quote, we introduce swift justice and this must be further developed and enhanced, close quotes, Davis said. Quote, we suggest the carrying of deterrents on your person, such as mace and or an alarm. Many police jurisdictions promote and encourage women to use a whistle as an alarm to draw public attention to their distress. I want y'all to know. I want to know two things in this statement. Does the Prime Minister know that apparently it's unlawful for us to possess mace?
Like, it doesn't seem like it.
From the time that he made this statement to now that he's asking us for a second term, are you aware of any legislative moves to enable ordinary citizens to carry mace? Mind you, we're still waiting on the authorization of police force officers to carry mace. Right? Anyway, I want to continue reading from the article, if you bear with me just a little longer. On Tuesday, during the party's monthly press conference at its headquarters, Davis called on the government to provide complimentary safety whistles to women and children. The comments led to backlash. The PM said, FNM trolls are making light of the issue of what is happening with our crime situation today. And this is no joke. He added, this is not about me or the PLP, but about the proliferation of crime against women and girls and the constitutional responsibility of the government to protect the safety of its citizens. That's up to me? Close quotes. Alicia, we're going to take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to just read a few excerpts from a follow-up article. Monroe calls ministers' comment about a rape whistle distasteful and not amusing. Nassau Tribune, 25th of April, 2023. We'll get into that after the break. Please stay tuned. You're on the clock with Erin Green, and we have Equality Bahamas and its founder, Alicia Wallace, joining us today as we juxtapose commitments to achievements, and later we're going to walk through the Feminist Standards for Governance, a policy exercise as we approach the general election. Us, like Andrew's grabbing
door, don't act like you don't know, you know. 5 years of PLP rule. Are you better off today? While you work, they've spent millions on taxpayer-funded trips, a government-funded luxury car, and handed out hundreds of millions in no-bid contracts. But for the rest of us, gas and groceries through the roof, VAT on bread basket items, healthcare that is broken, unaffordable, and out of reach. And it's not just your wallet. For 5 years, illegal immigrants have flooded our communities, putting excessive pressure on our schools, our housing, and our social services. As they flood in, Bahamian families fall behind. Under the FNM, there will be a change. The FNM has a plan to address the rising cost of living, secure our borders, protect Bahamians from illegal immigrants, and fix our health care. Because the FNM knows our job is to work for you and not the few. This message was paid for and authorized by the Free National Movement.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 News, Smart Talk all day.
When it comes to hearts at Cleveland Clinic, you can't miss a beat. You seek the best care possible, work with the brightest minds, and leave no stone unturned to get to the heart of the matter. Because understanding is always the first step to overcoming. For every heart in the world, see how we're advancing the future of heart care at Cleveland Clinic today.
Foreign commercial banks have been closing across our islands. For thousands of Bahamians, our country's post office savings banks are a lifeline, providing safe and secure banking. But Michael Pindart says,
we will abolish the bank through the post office system.
That's a risk Bahamians can't afford. That's why the Prime Minister is making post office savings banks stronger to protect Bahamian families and small businesses who rely on them. Paid for by the PLP.
This is the National Youth Guard program designed to train young people to help the Bahama Islands in times of disaster.
I decided to join to better serve my country as well as to better myself.
We train the help in search and rescue,
electrical, plumbing, and carpentry.
And things that they can actually expand on in their careers.
Young people who join the Youth Guard program discover a sense of identity, a sense of purpose, and a sense of patriotism.
This program isn't about only the individuals. It is about the country.
Put more money back in your pocket with the Fidelity Debt Consolidation Loan. Why pay less? Reduce your monthly debt payments down to one low, easy payment. Apply for a Fidelity Debt Consolidation Loan today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
The following is a paid political message.
Kalani, hey! The future is brighter. Oh, if you fighter.
That was a paid political message.
We got some jokey leaders in a jokey town. A tree ring circus, what a bunch of clowns. They're joking and they're jiving and they're messing around. We got some jokey leaders, what a bunch of clowns.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. Oi, KB. See that song by MacGyver? The song Magical, right? It magical. That's a campaign song. And that rivaling, right? That's as good as Jokey Leaders by KB. We got to have a political campaign song of the year show. I mean, they got more song out than they have policy positions. So we may have to talk about it. Good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning.
Welcome back. If you permit me, I want to juxtapose the two articles. And I want to read from this article. Monroe calls ministers' comment about a rape whistle distasteful and not amusing. From the Nassau Tribune, 25th of April, 23. We're reading this in response to the first article. Davis crime against women is no joke. Nassau Guardian, 6th of March, 2020. National Security Minister Wayne is former PM Hubert Minnis, doctor, in Parliament, accusing him of making, quote, a poor joke about rape victims, close quotes. Dr. Minnis brought whistles to the lower chamber, telling the women parliamentarians he got each of them a whistle. Dr. Minnis alluded to his successor's comments in 2020 about how the government should provide women and children with complimentary whistles. I want to start off by saying that just in the first sentence, right, we see a complete and utter misunderstanding of the space. It's almost as if men are not victims of rape at all, and that men cannot be victims of rape at all. Ms. Wallace?
Yes, and there's also the suggestion that women and girls are responsible for keeping ourselves safe, right, and for avoiding rape and other acts of violence, rather than putting attention on the changes that need to be made to the environment so that it is a space that we don't need to travel in large groups to do anything.
Yes, ma'am. I also now, I have a caller on the line. We're going to go to the caller and then we're going to go back to the article. Good morning, caller. Good morning.
Understand that our country, this great Bahama land, is that you get former politicians, former judges, former lawyers, former people in charge who have been in charge of the whole country before and who are in charge of government office. If they would just sit back and allow these government people them to do whatever and not say anything about it, I mean, it's like these people know better than me and you would know the law. And they know the system inside and out. And they would just allow these people to just keep them doing the wrong things to this great Bahama land. What do you think about that, Ms. Green?
I think that the extent to which policymakers appear to interfere in the operation and delivery of policy is worthy of examination, without a doubt.
But, Ms. Green, this is our country. We can't keep doing the same thing over and over. You get $141 missing, million, and they don't want to say nothing about it. You ask the prime minister.
No. There's not $141 million missing. That's not what that headline, and I'm going to presume that you're referring to the Beaches and Parks headline. That's not what that headline said. What the headline said is that they spent $141 million over the period The report was four. Now, the question of the extent to which speech by policymakers amounts to or results in political or policy interference is worthy of examination. For instance, we had at the time Lanisha Roll was appointed the Minister for Social Services responsible for, was it the Bureau of Women's Affairs at the time, Ms. Wallace, but transitioning to the Department of Gender and Family Affairs. The state was engaged in a national conversation about, I think, marital rape, and the minister got up and said, I don't believe in that, right? I think that's a clear instance of where a policies maker's speech, given it was inappropriate, it was given at an inappropriate time and in an inappropriate way, completely, and this is just my opinion as an advocate in the space, right? That one statement alone was sufficient to totally throw not just the national conversation on its head, but to disrupt the energy and the work within the ministry and the units responsible for rolling out the Department of Gender and Family Affairs. Right? And Ms. Wallace, can I ask you, do you think that's an appropriate example?
I do. And there's so much more that happened during that particular term that gave the impression, at least, that there was no interest in moving women's rights forward. There was no interest in criminalizing marital rape. And everything that we saw was theater. And it was bad theater. It wasn't even really making an effort to make us believe that anyone actually cared. And it came right from the minister, directly from the minister, and it filtered throughout the Department of Gender and Family Affairs.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to take this next caller, and then we're going to go back into the article just briefly, and then we're going to move on to standards for governance, feminist standards for governance, which I think is the only policy creation exercise leading into the 2026 general election. Certainly the only exercise open to the public, right, and whose results are open to the public as well. But let's go to this caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Erin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. And good morning to your guest. You know, what I wanted to add to what you guys are talking about with the results and stuff, I don't see it like how she was saying it. You know, I see it as, in my view, you can never, no matter what you do as a government or even everywhere at all times, so I feel like it's a way for me to help keep myself safe. It's not telling me that I'm responsible to keep myself safe. Way for me to help and keep myself safe. So if I'm in a position where there is no help and I can make a sound that would attract attention, that's how I see the whistle.
I got you.
Now, I don't know if that was a purpose for it or that's what Dr. Menez and those meant at the time, but I see it as a way of me helping to keep myself safe. So I see it as not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yep.
Because we all have some kind of little PVC pipe or little something in our car that we use, we keep there in the event that something happens. So the whistle is just a part of us trying to help ourselves.
I feel you. I hear that position. You think they bought a whistle spotter when they bought the shot spotter?
Well, they should have had one.
There you go. I feel you. I got you. I appreciate the commentary. The board is lit up, Ms. Wallace. We just take a couple more calls. Producer, I'm going to go to the next caller. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You there? Oh, we missed you. I'm sorry. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. We missed you. All right. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Ben. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I want you to explain something to me about the situation with the U.S. embassy.
We're not talking about that right now. Normally, I would be open to entertaining subjects off topic, but I have a guest in studio, right? So we're going to stick to... Now, what we are doing is we are having a political conversation, and we're about to transition into Equality Bahamas' Developing Feminist Standards for Governance Policy Creation Exercise, which enabled people to participate in a sort of a training exercise so they can learn how to create policy by identifying issues and the resources available and the stakeholders. And so I really want to have that conversation because I think it's the only organization doing that in the country.
Yes, I'm also listening. So what does the political parties do, like the PLP and the FNM, before they become a candidate? Is that not the same thing?
When you say, what do they do when they what?
To become a candidate, they have to go to these classes.
Yeah, no, it's not the same thing.
Thank you.
Trust me. I trust me, it ain't the same thing. But you're welcome. One last caller, and then we're going to go back. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Good morning to your guest.
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm Chester and Philip Davis, they joke in. You know, I'm in the protection. But, you know, Jay-Z said that he's a businessman, and he's a businessman, so let him handle his businessman.
Jay-Z?
Yeah, Jay-Z.
Oh, Jay-Z, him.
Jay-Z.
Yeah, we don't talk about him anymore either, but go on.
Right, yeah. Mm. And, you know, I have an ex-girlfriend who was a Bears bondsman in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And she tell me, so she's traveling with Miss Pinky, because Miss Pinky, just, she had Miss Pinky to take care of her business.
Okay.
You know Miss Pinky is?
No, tell me.
On Pink Honda, 22.
Miss Pinky, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, fortunately in the Bahamas, we have...
I'm talking about this one.
We have not reached that point yet.
So, hey, it's better. You take care of your business, and, you know, we'll have the monies and everything to deal with whatever come afterwards and because you don't want no beast and monster and thing them taking advantage of you, and you hear they find you nowhere. Let us think you take care of your business. And
but listen now. Listen.
Okay, protect yourself.
I got you. Thank you. See, there are some people who believe that you have the right to protect your body. It's yours. You have the right to protect it. That's strong commentary, but I'm glad that he attempted to measure it. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You still there? Ooh, that's some nice music, but I can't hear your voice. You there? Okay, we lost that caller. Miss Wallace.
Yes.
And so I think... it's heartening to hear that it's not just women, right, that are engaged in this conversation. It's not just women that are pushing for women to be able to protect themselves in whatever way possible. It's great to
hear. I want to shift us from the conversation about women protecting ourselves.
Okay.
And to focus on the environment that we find ourselves in that seems to require that we do all of this work to protect ourselves, that we have to be on high mm-hmm. alert, that we cannot function as independent people, as individuals, because we always need to find a man to accompany us somewhere at night, or we have to be in a large group of other women mm-hmm. to have the perception even of safety, mm-hmm. rather than focusing on street lighting, focusing on there being sidewalks, on... finding ways to help people to resolve conflict that isn't violent, mm-hmm. starting with young people, because we see it in schools, right? All of the stabbings and fights that are happening in schools are because people are not equipped with the tools to talk through disagreements and arguments. Mm-hmm.
And whistles are not working in that situation. Whistles are not working.
There are situations where using a whistle could actually be to your detriment, right? So you have to assess a situation and know if I... make noise, is that better than being quiet right now? Am I going to be at a greater risk?
Mm-hmm.
So the burden is still on us to make these assessments in a split second and to have the tools available to us to fight back, whatever that means,
mm-hmm.
rather than focus society and an environment where people are not behaving in this way and where people are not content to be quiet bystanders and are mm-hmm. prepared to stand up and intervene and to help to diffuse situations and to move people to safety. So, you know, we could talk about the whistle as a physical tool that's available should you need it. My position is that we should not need it.
Okay. I want to transition. I even you not prepared for this, Ms. Wallace. While you were talking, I remembered what The thing that stunned me this weekend, like on Mondays, I typically share things I see on the weekend, but I kept this one for today, and I almost forgot about it. So there's a website on the internet, because ain't nobody can claim the internet. You know, normally I'd say it's Trump's internet or Putin's internet or Maya Angelou's internet. Nobody can claim this internet. There's a website on the internet. Its colloquial name is the Rape Academy.
Yes.
And it turns out that millions of men, like we're talking about 8 million, 10 million, this website is seeing traffic, like 8 million men in, not a year, 8 million men, 8 million, what they call it, not cookies, but there have been 8 million
visits
to this website that has been informally named the Rape Academy, right? Where men teach each other how to get away with committing the most heinous acts of sexual violence against women, women who they are familiar with, in relationship with, how to do it and get away with it, how to do it and make money from it, how to do it and share it with your friends, right? Remember what I said? This website is getting like 8 million hits a month. And so I wanted to raise two things, right? First of all, the thought experiment, are you going to choose, if you're in the woods, would you had to interact with a bear or a man, who would you choose? And the majority of women say the bear. That website is why women choose the bear, right? But now I understand why we don't tolerate men saying not all men, right? Because there are the men that visit the Rape Academy online, and then there are the men who know men who visit the Rape Academy online and still hang out with them, still do business with them, still go to church with them, still drink and go to bar and eat with them. Some, I'm not saying that they're Bahamians on the Rape Academy, hitless. I'm not saying that at all. But bringing it back home to the Bahamas, right? If you're a man, it's not sufficient to say, well, I don't rape women. The question is, do you know men who rape women? Are you aware of circumstances in which men talk about it or do it and you ain't doing nothing about it?
Or men who just stop just short of rape in their assaults.
Yeah. Yeah. And men who think that a yes after 35 times of asking is a real yes. It's not a real yes. Ms. Wallace, I may have said something exciting and the board is lit up again. I want to take at least one of these calls before you tell us where we can find the feminist standards for governance policies that were created over the last several months. Good morning, caller.
Ms. Green, thank you for taking my call so much. And good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning.
Morning.
Can she hear me?
Yeah, she said morning. Morning.
Okay. Ms. Green, I heard KB. KB reaching the political thing. I mean, he's on the stage.
Okay.
Singing all the good songs from back in the civil service. The only thing he ain't singing yet is Too Late to Say Sorry or Sorry, the song that he sang in 2017.
Okay.
KB is here. I was asking for him. I get him mixed up with Julian Believe. Remember I asked you the question?
Yeah, but listen, because Julian Believe make a whole album.
He did?
For the PLP. I mean, if you check out the PLP album, Choose Progress.
Oh, he's singing more than one song, eh?
It's like 95% of them songs is
he just
really
sound like KB. I ain't interested in what he's singing. I'm more interested in what KB's singing. I just sound like KB, you see?
Yes, sir.
I like Julian Believe, too. Ms. Green.
Yes, sir.
All right, listen to the lady. I don't know if I asked you before. You remember me asking you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Wallace, the organization that she represents, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if they still arrest. What I was trying to find out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless I miss it, maybe they made a statement, right?
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago, there are some FBI files came out about Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned some names here. I think one of the gentlemen, without calling his name, was convicted And when I say convicted, was indicted and convicted, I think he get, I don't know if he spent any time. But there's another gentleman, there's another one of them whose name is mentioned. He's a candidate for one of these political parties. And any time he's being questioned, he says things like, he don't talk fool. Even his leader in the party make it sound like it's a joke or we don't have to take it serious. Is this acceptable? Is Ms. Wallace following this particular? Everyone is innocent until proven guilty. But Ms. Wallace, is the organization have anything to say but these names, what is mentioned, and the Jeffrey Epstein filing, this particular one running for one of the political parties? Every time he questions, he talking about he don't talk fool. He never do nothing wrong in his
life. Papa, thank you very much. If I could frame it, I think what Papa is saying is that his commentary nor the presence of the names in the files indicate guilt or involvement in any acts of sex, but that the commentary given by the individuals whose names were featured in the list was so like trite and trivial that it suggested that whether they were involved or not, they don't take the matter seriously. That even though they were not involved, because like I said, just having your name in the list doesn't mean that you were engaged in any wrongdoing or acts of sexual violence, but that their response take this issue in and of itself seriously.
Yes, and we don't even have to go that far. We could look at events that took place here in the Bahamas that were in the news and some of the people that are running again in this election.
If I could say, April 1st, 2022, the Minister of National Security's comments are carried in an article. And there's just a list of quotes that just are questionable. Like the one where he says, I mean, if you, and I'm paraphrasing, if you rape a nun and you rape a prostitute, you could get different sentences, right? The one where he says that we all know that a seven-year-old could consent even though the law does not recognize the ability to consent until you hit 16. Right? There's that type of commentary. There's when people say things like, well, we know these girls are highly sexualized. That commentary like this suggests that you don't take the issue seriously.
And it points to a need for systemic change and for greater involvement of the public and of different sectors, including the NGO sector, in the frontline politics that we see today, where we are presented with options and we could decide that none of these options are acceptable, but we are not a part of the process of building these options or of even creating the possibility that we could have more to choose from than we're currently presented with. Because the systems right now that we're living under, really, and trying to survive, trying to live through, are designed for, to use one of the campaign's framing, for the few. And that's benefiting all of the political parties in different ways, that they are able to either benefit directly from the systems that exist now or benefit from being able to point at them and distance themselves from it to make us believe that they would be different, but we know that they would still stand to gain.
Absolutely. Ms. Wallace, I'm putting plenty pressure on my producer now. I'm going to end the show with this quote by Mr. Monroe, who is running for Freetown. In the article, Monroe calls Minister's comment about a rape whistle distasteful and not amusing, from the 25th of April, 2023. St. Anne's MP Adrian White tried to get Mr. Monroe's comment struck from the record, insisting Dr. Minnis never joked about rape. Mr. Monroe replied, quote, "Let me be quite full in what Kalani said, because it was and is distasteful," close quotes, he added. Quote, "Madam Speaker, you know, I said to one of my colleagues on this side, I've really had enough of the self-righteousness of the people on the." He raised an article that related to rape victims and the use of whistles to deter rape. That is what he did in this place. We told him when he first said it that it wasn't in good taste. And in the end, in laughter, he talked about having a whistle for you and having a whistle for Elizabeth. It was in poor taste. You know what don't taste good? Cornish hens don't taste good. I don't like Cornish hens at all. I just, give me a real chicken, man.
Never did, never will.
Yeah. Ms. Wallace, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
I'm going to have Equality Bahamas back on before the election. If we could jam them in one more time, To the audience, thank you for accommodating this conversation today. We didn't take many calls. We're working on the text line, people. We're working on it. You guys, have a great day. Ms. Wallace, thank you very much. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM and CA Newry is up next.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Bahamas.